Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Tuesday, December 30th, 2025. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Biology study says grizzly habitat expanded by 12% in the Northern Continental Divide ecosystem centered around Glacier National Park, but lost 4% of habitat ground in the Greater Yellowstone ecosystem. Seattle area Somali community feeling strain from Trump's racist attacks, and Whitman County commissioners vote to extend county's wind farm moratorium for another 6 months. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. A group of federal and state wildlife managers have produced the first ever report on grizzly bear range in the lower 48 states and has found grizzly bear habitat in the Greater Yellowstone ecosystem shrunk by 3.5% during the last 2 years, but increased in the Northern Continental Divide region centered around Glacier National Park by 12%. Overall, there has been a 4% increase in range for grizzlies, which represents an increase of 2,250 square miles, which is an area about two-thirds the size of Yellowstone National Park. The 1,050 grizzly bears in the Greater Yellowstone ecosystem are occupying 963 fewer square miles than they did 2 years ago. Study lead author Cecily Costello, who is a research biologist for the Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Department, told WyoFile, the shrinkage is likely due to grizzlies running out of ideal habitat. Costello said, when you look at the habitat to the east of the Yellowstone ecosystem, to the south of Yellowstone, you're looking at a lot of open prairie. There's not really big river valleys those bears could move into. There's a little bit of a limitation in terms of the range expansion in those directions. Wyoming Game and Fish Department large carnivore supervisor Dan Thompson said, I think it's just indicative of where the population is. I don't think we should expect it to expand. Grizzly bear mortality in the Greater Yellowstone ecosystem was at a high level in 2024, with 72 known grizzly deaths. This year, there have been 71 grizzly deaths so far, about 35% higher than the 10-year average of 54 grizzly deaths per year in the Greater Yellowstone ecosystem area. Interagency grizzly bear study team leader Matt Gould said the leading causes of grizzly death in the Greater Yellowstone ecosystem this year was livestock conflict, which resulted in 21 grizzly deaths. The other leading causes were 16 deaths because of site conflicts with humans, 12 deaths due to self-defense, 9 accidental deaths, and 6 deaths due to natural causes such as predation. The largest contraction of occupied grizzly habitat in the Greater Yellowstone ecosystem was in eastern Idaho in the Big Hole Mountains and Snake River Range. There was also a contraction in the Ruby Mountain Range in Montana. In the Northern Continental Divide ecosystem, the 12% expansion of habitat is the equivalent of 2,500 square miles, mostly on the eastern and southern edges of the ecosystem, in the Sapphire, Boulder, and Big Belt Mountains. Northern Continental Divide grizzlies are also occupying more open prairie than the Yellowstone ecosystem bears because there the grizzlies move down big river corridors. Costello said, when you look at the plant communities and mountains that exist in western Montana, there's still a lot of what could be considered decent bear habitat. It's the expectation that we'll probably continue to see bears moving into those habitats.
As people in northwestern Montana recover from severe flooding earlier this month, they can find the help they need all in one place. The Winter Storm Resource Center continues today in Libby. Anna Lau with the Montana Department of Natural Resources and Conservation says the event offers important information.
It's connecting citizens with local nonprofits, state resources, and other entities to assist them with their resource needs.
Lau says there are also volunteer signups to provide services and make donations. Heavy rains on December 11th and 12th caused flooding that took out bridges and damaged roads and buildings in and around Libby. The town is still under a boil water order after a dam failed and disrupted the local water supply. The Winter Storm Resource Center is open Tuesday from noon to 8 p.m. at Libby's Memorial Center. Lau says a second purpose of the event is to gather storm damage reports.
We are collecting information from private citizens and business owners about the damage that they have experienced in their property. This will help our disaster emergency services solicit for more funding, potentially.
Lau says local crews have been out this week doing preliminary damage assessments.
They were going to different bridges and infrastructure to get a better idea of what they are looking at and what type of resources and needs that they will need.
She says FEMA teams will visit the area on Wednesday to do more assessments. Initial estimates indicate flood repairs could cost tens of millions of dollars. I'm Laura Hatch, Big Sky Connection.
Trump's racist comments about Somalis about a month ago, calling them garbage, put the Puget Sound's large Somali community on edge. After that, a surge of ICE raids targeted the Somali community in Minneapolis, and then in a primetime address December 17th, Trump attacked Somalis again, blaming them for fraud crimes in Minnesota. The Seattle Times reports the tensions were visible at a South Seattle Know Your Rights workshop December 22nd, in which participants spoke in English and Somali. About 50 people attended the workshop. Somali American community leader and legal advocate Jama said, "My phone has been blowing up. The community is scared. People are not leaving their homes. I'm even carrying my U.S. passport now." According to the Seattle Times, Seattle area Somali community members were reporting increased activities by immigration officers last week. The 2020 census says Washington has 16,000 residents of Somali descent. Most live in Seattle or southern King County. The other hubs of the Somali American community are in Minnesota and Ohio. Jama said most people with ties to Somalia are U.S. citizens and others are legal permanent residents. The community is entrenched. Early refugees from Somalia have U.S.-born children and grandchildren. Multiple Somali Americans have won local elections in Washington. SeaTac Mayor Mohamed Egal said it's clearly unfair to link Somali Americans to crimes that some greedy, stupid people committed. The Trump administration is blaming the entire Somali community for social service scams in which people stole hundreds of millions of government dollars by billing state agencies for social services they never provided. Egal says he thinks Trump is directing anger at Somalis to distract voters from other issues. Newly elected SeaTac City Council member Bedria Abdullahi said Somali Americans in Minnesota have missed work and avoided shopping out of fear. Speaking of an incident in Minnesota where apparent ICE agents pushed a U.S. citizen to his knees to detain him, Abdullahi said, "This isn't about illegals or criminals. It's really about racism." Seattle Office of Immigrant and Refugee Affairs Director Hamdi Mohammed said at the December 22nd workshop, apparent ICE agents arrested Somali ride-hail drivers outside Seattle-Tacoma International Airport that same day. Mohammed, who is also an elected Port of Seattle commissioner, said Somali Americans are canceling or delaying travel plans even if they have not done anything wrong because they don't want to risk detention at an airport. Mohammed said she has heard concerns about the possibility of hate crimes and Trump's statements emboldening bullies in schools or those who might assault minorities in public. She said Somali women who wear hijabs could be particularly vulnerable because of their visibility. Jama said, I have had young women reach out to me because they take public transit. They're going to drive or have relatives drop them off. Mohammed Egal and Tukwila City Council member Mohammed Abdi signed a statement from local Somali elected officials. The statement said, we must stand firmly against hate in all its forms and speak clearly when language is used to diminish, divide, or dehumanize our communities.
KRFP programming is sponsored by listeners like you and by Essential Art Gallery and Fine Gifts at 203 South Main Street in Moscow, showcasing high-quality art, pottery, jewelry, art glass, sculptures, scarves, textiles, wood and metal art, and fine chocolate and gifts from regional, national, and international artists. KRFP is also sponsored by Moscow Ale House, with something for everyone in the family. You can find Moscow Ale House at 226 West 6th Street or call 208-882-BREW. That's 208-882-2739.
The Trump administration's immigration crackdown is sowing fear and uncertainty in Washington farm workers, as stalled legislation meant to improve the situation is in trouble. Many farm workers are immigrants with no legal status. Growers worry the deportation rush could negatively affect chronic labor shortages. According to the Washington State Standard, federal agents have not been abducting workers in orchards, but instead have been targeting workers when they venture outside their homes or when they are commuting to work. Yakima Valley horticulturalist Raul Arroyo Rosas said they got to pay their bills, so it makes it hard to not come. Since May, Congress has delayed the Farm Workforce Modernization Act four times. The measure includes a provision which would offer farm workers a path towards legal residency. Whitman County Commissioners voted yesterday to extend the county's wind farm moratorium for another 6 months. The current moratorium has been in effect since January of this year and was set to expire January 7th. Commissioners instituted the moratorium in response to pushback from Colfax area residents on the planned Harvest Hills Wind Project from developer Steelhead Americas. Steelhead Americas wants to build 45 wind turbines on private land near Colfax along State Route 272. The moratorium blocked any new conditional use applications for wind turbine developments. According to the Daily News, the decision came Monday evening at a public hearing in Colfax, where nearly all 40 members of the public at the meeting favored extending the moratorium. The new moratorium will stay in effect until June 28, 2026. Whitman County Planning Commission members Bill Myers and Dave Gibney both favored extending the moratorium, saying it provides them time to finalize Whitman County's wind energy code revisions and permit the county to consider potential legal issues. At Monday's hearing, members of the public said extending the moratorium will allow the county to adjust any new wind energy bills that legislators might introduce during the upcoming session. On December 18th, a federal judge in Spokane found Aaron Aung of Moscow and his father, James Aung, guilty of parental kidnapping and conspiracy to commit international parental kidnapping in a case from 2024. The mother of a 2-year-old girl who lived in Pullman reported the father had not returned with the girl at the agreed time to end a custody visit. The Pullman Police Department opened a missing persons case, and law enforcement in northern Mexico located Aaron Aung and the child on July 8, 2024. Mexican authorities took Aaron Aung into custody on an international warrant from the FBI. The girl also was temporarily in FBI custody so she could be reunited with her mother. The two were traveling in a car registered to Aaron Aung's father, Jameis Aung. According to the Daily News, police said Jameis Aung helped Aaron Aung with the kidnapping. Pullman police say Aaron Aung's girlfriend, Nadia Cole, helped with the kidnapping and pled guilty to kidnapping charges earlier.
National medical school enrollment surpassed 100,000 for the first time this year, a milestone following a three-year decline in applicants. This comes as many states, including Oregon, face a significant healthcare worker shortage. The Oregon Employment Department reports the state will need nearly 225,000 new healthcare workers over the next decade to meet the growing demand. Rob Cloutier, Assistant Dean for Admissions at Oregon Health and Science University, notes that after an uptick in applicants during the pandemic, followed by a slight dip, application numbers are beginning to rise again.
We're going to need more doctors in the future than we have currently. So I think that this is a good way to start addressing a possible healthcare shortfall in terms of the physician workforce.
Cloutier explains the challenge lies not in attracting applicants, but in the school's limited capacity to accept them. This year, the school received about 7,300 applications, but can only admit 150 of them. Nationally, the Health Resources and Services Administration has forecast a shortage of nearly 700,000 physicians and nurses by 2037. Experts attribute the shortage to an aging population's rising demand, high rates of retirement, and challenges in retaining workers due to burnout. Cloutier says any policy solutions to the problem need to be multifaceted.
I grow increasingly humbled by what it will take to fix the healthcare system right now because it's just a very complicated problem, but it's one that nonetheless we are going to have to figure out.
The report also found that more women entered medical school than men for the seventh consecutive year, although male applicants have been catching up over the last few years. For Public News Service, I'm Isabel Charlet.
And that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow Pullman area, mostly clear tonight, steady temperature around 30. Partly sunny, high 39 tomorrow, and partly cloudy Wednesday night, low 27. Mostly cloudy, high 39 Thursday, New Year's Day, and 80% chance of rain Thursday night, mainly after 4 a.m. Snow level 4,000 feet, rising to 5,700 feet after midnight, low 34. And on Friday, 80% chance of rain mainly after 10 a.m., high 42. Currently 34 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website. There's a drop-down box there that says Support KRFP. There you can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting you, our listeners, know your business or nonprofit supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho 83843. Also, look for the end of the year fundraising letter, which may have arrived in your mailbox. I'm Lee Robartis. Jim Roach assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. Flashpoints coming up at 6:30. And then at 7:30. We will have Rude Awakening live on the air. That'll go till 9:30. Music with Brent Bent, 9:30 till 11 tonight. And at 11 o'clock, we will have another edition of the podcast, Sons of Patriarchy. Stay tuned for more KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Pro-life.
Programming on KRFP is made possible in part by support from KRFP members and
John's Alley Tavern, Moscow's home of live music. John's Alley is located at 114 East 6th Street in downtown Moscow.
Programming on KRFP is also sponsored by Friends of the Clearwater, a 501c3 environmental nonprofit dedicated to protecting your public lands. FOC is defending the wildlands, wildlife, and waterways of North Central Idaho for future generations. Friendsoftheclearwater.org.
KRFP, Moscow, Idaho.
Community radio is all about building community.
Well, you know I have a love for everyone I know.
In a world built to kill us, survival is a radical act, so donate today.
And you know I have a drive to live, I won't let go.
In these turbulent times when the focus is on survival, KRFP will bring you the news and entertainment that will help you survive. In these dark times, KRFP will aspire that nobody who is marginalized or under attack will be abandoned or silenced. Your donation will help guarantee that independent voices are still available on the airwaves. KRFP is always focusing on community building.
If you received a KRFP end-of-the-year fundraising letter, quickly open it. Read how we are here to build community and then donate to keep our all-important 1100-watt FM signal on the air.
Don't be afraid to donate.